The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. And I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Now, later on, we will have another episode of The Scale on Shanuckle. And of course, this is a 20-part series where we aim to discover the meaning of these wonderful Irish phrases that have been used in the Irish language for many years. We're on to episode 19 of 20 episodes in this series, all coming from Sculvihill Naofa in Ballinskellig. But on the programme this morning, we have a very special interview I did a few weeks ago with Bart and Mary O'Riordan, who immigrated to Chicago in the 1950s from Glenbeigh and met over there and got married. And even though Bart is now in his 90s, Mary and himself still returned to Glenbeigh. And I caught up with them to chat about their childhood, immigration and much more. So sit back, relax and enjoy this. Just for a bit of context, Mary was born in Glenbeigh, was one of five, four girls and one boy. The four girls immigrated to the US and Bart was one of eight. And a lot of them immigrated as well. And they came back then, a good few of them as well. But Bart and one of his brothers are still in Chicago. And Bart, on the 30th of April 1955, via Pan Am Airways, immigrated to Chicago with his aunt Alice Sheehan as his sponsor. And Mary went on the 18th of October 1958 with her older sister, Hannah. And we are going to talk about that, I suppose, the context of the time as well as the programme goes on. So I hope you enjoy these interviews.
It's Bart O'Riordan. I'm from Glenbeigh, Leitrim West.
Mary O'Riordan, Corraheen, Glenbeigh, County Kerry.
So I'm here with Mary and Bart and we're looking out at a stunning view, looking down towards Dukes and inches across the way in the distance, and we're here in Glenbeigh. They're home for a while, so I'm delighted that I'm getting the opportunity to speak to them. Mary, I'll start with yourself. We're actually looking at the house where you were born, and to say you could throw a stone at it, you could be a very bad stone thrower and you'd hit it. It's that close.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I was born.
And was there many of you in family?
Five.
Okay.
Five of us, four girls and one boy.
Yeah.
And my brother passed away. He was young. He was in his, 50s, which I think is young.
Mm-hmm.
And, Yeah, we all went to America. I left 67 years ago. And I was 18 when I left. And we went to Chicago and worked in different places.
Yeah. No, I'll get to all that, but you've a fascinating story to tell before you get there. So what did your father work at?
My father worked on the land commission and the banks. They said the banks. I mean, along the banks of the rivers and Castlemaine and Kiel.
Yeah.
And a fascinating bit of information. When I went to America, I'm skipping now, but anyway, when I went to America and I met this guy in Chicago, and he said, your dad was the first one that gave me my job working in the banks.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
and he was in Chicago and he was from Kiel.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, before we went to America, I went to the national school over here, and from there, we went to Milltown for 4 years, I think, for the intermediate. I don't know if it was four or three. And we took the train. We got the train over the road, and we took the train, and we were always late for school because by the time the train got to Milltown, and we had to walk up, it was about a mile and a half or more from the train station all the way up to the convent, which I don't think the convent is there anymore.
Mm.
But, after that, We went to the Carnegie in Killargan for 2 years.
Where was the train station here?
Right in front. And you know when you pass the school, that red house that's there? Yeah, when you cross the road there, the train.
Was that like a gatekeeper there, kind of?
Gatekeeper right at that house, yeah.
That was one of the biggest mistakes they ever made when they took off the train.
Yeah.
Because the train was a comfort. If you were going someplace, you got the train, you sat down and looked out the window. And if you were going, no matter the Castlevania or Killargan, you didn't have to worry about traffic or anything else. You just sat in your seat. And if you talked to whoever's in the seats next to you, if you had the paper, and you got to town, you got off. Mm. Now you're going and you're looking out the window, fighting traffic all, no matter if you're going or coming.
Mm. It was one of the most scenic train journeys in the world as well, wasn't it, when you think it started at Renard Point?
Oh, yes, it was great. There was people that got on the train just to go to Renard and they would ride back again, just for the view.
Yeah. And the fish as well used to come and all that, so it helped with commerce.
Great fishing that time. Mm. But later on, I think the big trawlers out there, they cleaned the bay out and you don't have the salmon and the white trout like we used to, you know. There used to be a lot of fish in the river that time.
Yeah. And tell us about you were from the other side of town. We won't say the bad side of town. It was the other side of town.
What they call the top of the parish.
Oh. So, for people at home listening, ye didn't really meet, I suppose. Ye knew of each other's families. We didn't really meet till ye went to Chicago. But before we get to there, tell us about where you were born. Where did you grow up?
I was born in Leitrim West. Mm. And that's...
Farming?
Farming. Oh, geez, that's all that was there, man.
Mm. And I'd fish?
Oh, well, we'd go fishing once in a while, you know. Better at night.
You have to read between the lines there. Yeah. Country people might know what you're on about when you say at night. But I suppose that, you know, that was the thing around, you know, in certain areas of Kerry to get fish. But people, I suppose, might have mistaken it for maybe otherworldly things going on at that time when you'd see flashing lights in places.
Hopefully.
I think the fairies got a bad rap, did they?
Oh, the fairies are over a lot of nights.
You guys were the fairies, right?
And Mary, just did you like school?
I did. Not that much. I didn't like the nuns that much.
Mm.
They were very strict. Mm. Oh, very strict. So, yeah, I didn't enjoy it.
Mm.
And then Carnegie was a little better,
yeah.
You know.
Was education important at home, though, that you were?
Oh, yeah, my mother.
Yeah.
She never wanted us to go to England.
Yeah.
Nobody wants. So,
But times were tough then. Like, was it, you know, even when you were growing up, was it kind of the options, were they to immigrate, like?
Yeah, no choice. Yes, there was no choice.
Yeah.
We had to go. My uncle sponsored us over.
Yeah.
Me and my older sister.
Okay.
So... And we left in 58.
Bart, I want to talk about you in your childhood. Did you have an injury that you were in hospital for a while? Tell me about that.
I was in St. Catherine's Hospital to leave for 9 months.
9 months?
9 months.
And what happened to you?
I had what they call osteomyelitis. It was a bone disease. And it started here. And it was... going down, that was before penicillin B was...
Yeah. So just below your hip?
Yeah, it was just started here.
The thigh, yeah.
Which was almost down to the joint of my knee.
Whoa. And what would happen? Like, it was brittle, or what was the effects of it?
Oh, Jesus. I remember being inside in bed, and the doctors, they were talking about my knee. And... they were saying, well, you know, if it gets into the joint of the knee, we might have to amputate.
Oh, my God. And what age were you?
I was 9, I suppose.
That must have been shocking to hear that, if you're over it. Yeah.
And you know what my problem was?
Football.
That was my football. If they could take a leg off, I couldn't play football. And that was the whole thing. You know, when you think back, it was kind of stupid, but... That was my concern. If my leg was gone, I couldn't play football.
But that's a young lad at that time, I suppose. That's all you'd be thinking.
That was my thinking, yes.
Yeah. And 9 months, that must have been like a prison sentence, was it, inside?
Well, geez, there was no choice, man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Mary?
When his father came in to visit him, which was maybe every month or less.
They had to go in on the train, like, that was...
Yeah.
And they had to walk from the train to the hospital and walk back again, like, so it was no easy thing, especially for my dad and my mom with that.
Yeah.
You know, because for the boy, you know how far it is, more a mile, I suppose.
Yeah. And what did you do to pass the time, can you remember?
Well, when I was in the hospital,
yeah.
I read a lot.
Did you?
That was, I kind of got educated in the hospital, because any time you could get a book, you read.
Yeah.
And that was the...
A form of escape.
That was the pastime.
Yeah, but it allow you to escape kind of the walls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was... there was more kids there than me, like, it wasn't, that was the normal thing.
Yes, I know.
There was a lot of kids from Dublin, because it was the time of the war.
Oh, yes. You know, when the war was going on, that time, part of Dublin got bombed, and they brought them fellas down to Tralee, and they were in the hospital in Tralee when I was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, Bart and Mary O'Riordan there from Glenbey, living in Chicago now with a good few decades. And Bart was talking about his time in hospital, and we'll actually return to that story after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
You're listening to an interview I did a few weeks ago with Bart Mary O'Riordan, who immigrated to Chicago in the 50s, originally, of course, from Glenbey. Now, before the break, you were hearing about Bart, and as a child, he was in hospital with a severe ailment in his leg, but he was determined to get out of hospital one way or another. You did get to play football then, though, I'd imagine, when you came out.
Oh, when I came out, yes.
Yeah.
You were in the hospital for 9 months.
Yes.
And it was around Christmas time.
Yes.
And then Dr. Shanahan came in and he said, I think I can cure your...
Was it Shanahan? No, it was a...
Oh, well...
Shanahan was my doctor.
Oh, right. Okay. But anyway, he came in, he said, I can cure your knee.
Yeah.
Who's this? What you?
The doctor that came in, the okay. New doctor, a young doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to get out of there, you know. I wanted to go home, but I was like, I can do that. And so I was operated. I said, well, if you do, you better start working right now, because I'm getting out of this place.
And what did you mean by that? Were you going to escape?
I was getting the hell out of the place, yes. I was in the hospital for half my life, for goddamn sake. What else would I do? Like?
So what was the solution?
Well, the solution was that he operated the next day, the doctor came in, and by God, I came out a lot faster, you know.
Before Christmas.
Oh, yes. So that made a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Needles? What was the needles? Were they big needles?
Oh, needles. Oh, jeez. You were getting penicillin shots. And at that time, they didn't have it perfected. It wasn't a little, you know, like you get now with a little thing like that.
It'd be like a little
prick,
yeah.
This was a pump.
Oh, go away.
Oh, yeah. The shot was worse than... It was almost like a Viking operation. My two cheeks and my ass were so sore. You couldn't sit down, man.
Jeez. And did you ever... get to run away? Did you run away, like, or did would uh-huh. Did you try and run away?
Well, geez, it was too far away, man.
The nurses,
yes.
And was it in the bonds? No, it wasn't, was
no,
it?
No. What's the...
St. Catherine's, he said.
St. Catherine's Hospital.
Oh, yes. Very good. So you got out, the operation was a success,
yeah.
And you got...
Operations.
And you were able to play your beloved Gaelic football then, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But you had a big scar, did you, after that?
Jeez, I'm all cut up. They started here, and it was getting to the joint of my knee, and that's what worried me, like.
Yeah.
And a young doctor came in there, and he said, well, if you go, why don't you go home for Christmas, he said, and when you come back, I'll operate. I says, I'm going home from here once.
You were a tough young lad.
I probably was.
Yeah,
I'd say you're still tough. But the reason I mentioned the scar is your mother did a very nice thing for you, didn't she, in relation to playing Gaelic football?
Oh,
with your shorts.
Oh, yeah. She had to make them.
Yeah,
because they only come down to here, like. Yeah. I'm all chopped up, so I would never be left play football in school or any bloody thing, you know. And so my mother made my shorts for me, and so they were long. So when I went to school, and we'd go for a shower after playing football, and of course everybody went in, but I'd have my shorts on. They said, "Why the Christ do you take your shorts off?" And I says, "No, because I says I get my shorts washed now as well as my."
You had the answer.
Well, you had to have the answer.
Yeah.
But
yeah, ma'am.
He went to the seminary in Killarney. That's where
you... time in the school, Killarney.
Yeah, you went to the Sim.
Yeah.
St. Brendan's. Yeah. And was that... Did you have to be... Like, I know my uncles went there, they got a scholarship, so you had to... That had to be paid for as well, I presume, did it?
Well, anything you did for St. Brendan's, you had to pay for, like, but it was a fairly decent school, you know, that was the whole idea.
Mm.
And the first year I was there, I stayed in a place called the Ivy Cottage at the top of High Street. And my God, I was sorry I left the Ivy Cottage because that lady, she put on a great meal. Her husband was a mailman and her son was a mailman. They're probably still in the same, you know, that family is probably still in the same business. But she was a great lady, I tell you that much. Then I went into school and my God, this... The food in school didn't back up at all what she was serving.
Yeah. But football is a very big part of St. Brendan's as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, football was, yeah. Hurling was not... They had hurlers there, but football was the game. You know, that was the game.
Mm.
So we played football any time we got out the door that we got free, we kicked them football.
Mm. But it was obviously important in your family education as well that you went to St. Brendan's, because like a lot of people, you know, they mightn't have gone to secondary school even back then.
Oh, well, I think it was my Aunt Alice that actually paid for my first year there, whatever. Like, that's how it started out.
Is that the same woman in America?
That was the woman from America, yes.
She sounds like an amazing lady.
My dad actually raised her, you know. My mother was a big family, and she was one of the youngest ones. So my mother got married. My dad was that raised her,
okay.
You know. So she was more our family like than anybody else's family.
Yeah.
Great lady. Oh my God, she was a wonderful.
Yeah, but she looked after you, kind of all in you know. Yeah,
she sent checks all the time. You know, at that time when it was like she sent money when it was a crime to have money.
Yeah.
Oh no, she was a great lady.
But you must have got, and I know we're going back to your childhood again, but you must have been getting packages from America if you'd people over, you know, these famed packages from America that had come for Christmas.
Mostly from my Aunt Alice. Yeah. That was it. Yeah. That was it.
We got them from my uncle, you know, and I remember he would send home spaghetti and spaghetti sauce. We didn't know what it was.
Spaghetti sauce.
Yeah.
I don't think there'd be many in Glimbe would be having spaghetti that time.
Flour. He also sent home flour.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And it was very bland, the flour. You know, when you made a cake, it never rose up.
Yeah. And where was your local shop here?
The village.
Oh, okay, you'd go into the village, yeah.
Into the village, yeah.
Okay. And what was Glimbe like back then? Because, you know, a lot of rural places, the rural towns, villages, they've changed so much to now. They used to be a lot more vibrant places. Maybe you'd argue there's, you know, a lot of regeneration going on. But there was a lot more shops, butchers, you know, clothes, you know.
But it's still the village is still the same.
Yeah.
Only some of the shops we had, they're closed down, but the buildings are still there.
Mm.
It's exactly the same. The church is the same. Towers Hotel is the same. Yeah.
Is there a comfort in that when you come back?
Well, yes. You know where you're at.
Yeah.
Just have memories of hanging out around there, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the top of the parish got cleaned out when they started moving the families up the country to the, you know, they took the big families and moved them up to the Kildare and Westmeath and Meath.
What parts of Glenbey involved in that they were,
All the big families.
Yeah.
Back, little school at one time had four teachers. And that'll tell you how many students were going to school there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, they closed. Because everybody moved out, like all the big families moved out of there.
Yeah.
Because they were, they transferred them up the country and that was it.
Yeah. And they didn't receive, some families like that didn't receive a great welcome when they got up either, you know.
Well, it was tough. All because they had to break up the big ranches.
Yeah.
So that they, you know, that's what they did. They took the big, that the English crowd owned.
Yeah.
They broke up those ranches and they divided them amongst the Irish.
Yeah.
And the fellow living there, of course, didn't want any of that part of that stuff.
Yeah.
I can see the reasoning.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a great book written on it, actually, and you know, parts of Ballinskellig's family has moved as well. Bart and Mary O'Riordan there, and we'll have more from them after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Kerry. Now, we're listening to an interview I did with Mary and Bart O'Riordan from Glenbey, who immigrated to Chicago in the 1950s. Now, I think it's important to just give you a bit of context of what Ireland was like in the 1950s. And I read a great article that was on the UCC website by Ariel Glenn, and it was written in December 2012, but kind of gives a good context of the way things were. Commentators have variously referred to the 1950s in Ireland as the decade of doom and gloom, the worst decade since the famine and the lost decade. Agriculture, the traditional mainstay of the Irish economy, continued to decline throughout the 1950s. The state dedicated insufficient effort to developing new industries to fill the gap created by the demise of, in particular, of the small farm rural economy. As a consequence, little work was available for thousands of young people coming of age. Unemployment remained high throughout, and it was estimated that from 1949 to 1956, real national income rose by only 8%, at a time when the average increase in European equated to approximately 40%. Most young people knew that the only way to secure steady employment, therefore, was to cross the Irish Sea or to immigrate to America. In the 1950s, approximately 500,000 left the Irish Republic. Considering the country's population then stood at less than 3 million, to lose approximately 16% of your population, most of whom were very young and left to gain employment abroad in one decade, was astonishing. 500,000 left in the 50s. It's amazing to think of that statistic. Indeed, Ireland shared the ignominy of being the only country in Europe to see its population decline in the 1950s with East Germany. Roughly three out of every five children who grew up in the 1950s in Ireland left the country at some stage. Why did so many people leave independent Ireland during the late 1940s and 1950s? In 1950s Ireland, agriculture still accounted for approximately two-fifths of the working population. The small farm rural economy, especially in the west of Ireland, was in an irreversible decline. Most young people knew that the only way to secure steady employment and the lifestyle that went along with a regular weekly income involved immigrating. As the Commission on Immigration noted in 1955, immigration became part of the generally accepted pattern of life. So that just gives you, I suppose, a bit of context as to the time that Mary and Bart O'Riordan immigrated for America. And when people immigrated in the 50s to the US, they often had someone out there ahead of them as their sponsor. And it was usually a family member, as we'll hear now.
Mary, you mentioned the sponsor, and just for people, maybe younger listeners mightn't realise what way it kind of worked back then. You know, when you were immigrating, someone was out there ahead of you that kind of paved the way for you in a way, and paid the way for you. So how did that work, and who was your sponsor? And then Bart, I'll ask you, who was yours?
My uncle Mickey was my sponsor, and I mean, we had to go to Dublin, have our physicals and all that, and get clearance before we could go to, and they were responsible for us when we went out.
Okay.
They had to take care of us and all that.
And how did you go out?
We went on the plane.
First time on a plane,
yeah. And I think we landed, we had a stopover in Gander. which is Gander.
Newfoundland.
Gander, yeah. And then into Chicago.
Whoa. Yeah. What was it like getting on a plane for the first time?
Well, it didn't bother me. I just hated leaving here at the time.
Do you know what I watched only, this is by sheer coincidence, not last night, the night before, Brooklyn, that film, Saoirse Ronan is in it. It's about the 50s, a girl immigrating for the first time. Yeah. And the homesickness she feels for the first while over. Yeah. And she didn't seem to kind of want to go either. So what was that like?
Same thing with me. I thought it was the saddest day of my life when I left here.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And it was a beautiful night. My girlfriend from Mary Bridget O'Shea, her brother was Pat Shea, the football guy, and she came over to visit us that night, cycling from Carr Lake all the way, and we met up back the road, and she brought us missiles, our gift going, each of us got a missile from her, which was lovely. And, so I thought it was the saddest day of my life.
And if you were to stay, what was here for you?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing was here, you know. What could we do?
Yeah.
And our parents wouldn't let us go to England. So there was very few jobs.
But I wouldn't blame you not wanting to leave here. Look at this view. It's amazing. But then people say you can't live off fresh air. So you went over to Chicago, is it? Is that where you... And what was it like arriving there? That must have been some culture shock.
It was. It was a very big culture shock. But my uncle and his wife, and they had no kids, were very good to us. Yeah, so I think the next morning he even took us out to go look for a job. Get on the L, showed us how to get downtown. Get on the L and get a job.
What's the L?
The
tube, is it?
The tube, but this is overhead.
Okay.
So we got jobs. We got jobs right away, actually.
What was the job?
My first job, not downtown now, my first job was electrical company, Simpson Electrical Company. It was on the west side in Lake Street in Chicago. And it was like soldering.
Soldering.
And then we left there and got another job at Marshall Fields, which is a big store. And this was only part-time. We had two jobs now. The part-time job was for Christmas, and we would wrap the packages, the fancy packages for the people who would buy gifts, and they bought them wrapped and all that. So that's what we did. So,
what would be your first communication home then? Would it be a letter or what would it be?
Oh, letters. Yeah, letters right away. Yeah, we would. Yeah, that's the only way,
And it took a long time for them to get home, did it? Or was it quick?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure on that.
Oh. Bart, your story then. Who sponsored you and where did you go?
Well, I had brother and sisters over there before, so that made a difference for me, like, so.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually my Aunt Alice that sponsored all of us.
Okay.
So that was a big... And we've had aunts and uncles in America for going back a good many years. I don't know how far back it goes, but it's quite a ways back, you know.
Yeah. It was part of it, wasn't it? It was just part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you go work at?
When I got there, I was working in an office. And then...
A bank?
In a bank for a while, and then... My brother was working in a dairy, and he was going on the police department. And I asked him how much he was making, and he told me, and I said, geez, that's more than I'm making. So I went to my boss, and I told him, I says, well, you're not paying me enough money here, fella. There's a job that I can get at a dairy that's paying a lot more money. Oh, he said, you're making a big mistake, he said. You're doing great here. He said, in a few years, you'll be making real money.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I need the real money right now.
It's like the hospital all over again.
Well, that was it, I said, I need the money now. So that was where I went to the dairy and worked there. And I was going to school the next night for what I call operating engineering, which is... actually for the buildings, taking care of the heating and the air conditioning and all that kind of stuff. Because I didn't want to be stuck in an office at all. I hated the office jobs.
Yeah.
So that was what I did. Then when I got out of there, I took the exam and I got in, and the University of Wallanai came along in the meantime, and they were opening up, so I went there, got the job right away, and I've been there for years, but I worked a lot of old part-time jobs in between, like.
Mm. And what year did you go? And you were 57, is it?
58.
58. 3 years, 3 years apart.
1955, I think, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, 1955 I went, yeah.
And you have letters from your father, and you kind of write back and forth.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And they're kind of historical, because one of them mentions when electricity was coming. Am I right?
Far later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes. While we were there, that's when the top of the parish, as we call it, that's when they got the electricity.
Yeah.
Before that, you had to go by what you could do yourself.
And outhouses and all that. Like, it must be some difference to go from here, no electricity, probably no running water, you might have to go somewhere for the water, toilets, not really there, sewage systems, and you go over then to Chicago, which is all this. It must be like stepping 50 years into the future.
Well, that part of it, I didn't pay attention to.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I expected, you know, because I had aunts and uncles and everything else, and, you know, I kind of knew what America was like.
Mm.
So that part didn't bother me at all.
Mm.
So that was no problem there at all.
Mm. But I'm neglecting the biggest part, how ye met, and I'm trying to work my way there. Like, when you went over, did you very much kind of, because I suppose you've family over there, do the Irish hang out with the Irish, or do you mix, or is there Irish societies, or how did that work, Mary?
Yes, the Irish. Every Friday, the weekends, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, we went to the dances.
Right.
To meet all the Irish dances.
Yeah.
Yeah. North side, west side, the dead salt, yeah.
And what were the popular spots? You know, in London you hear about the Crown and the Galty Moor. What was it in Chicago?
The Keeban's Ballroom was on the west side.
Mm-hmm.
We went there a lot.
It's a few days ago now.
And so, Bart, I presume, did you go into the GA pitches or GA clubs as well over there, or did you get involved in that, or did you stay away from
it? Right away,
them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where did you go?
Shoebridge Fields was the name of the park where we played, like.
Yeah.
And at the same time, then I was coaching soccer with the...
Oh, jeez, that foreign game.
Yeah, with the foreign game, with the school where I was,
really,
you know. So I was involved with both ends of it.
So how did you meet, Mary? I'll go to you first. Bart might have a different account.
How did we meet? I didn't know him.
Yeah.
But I knew his younger brother, Jerry, and because he was dating my best friend that we went to national school together. So that's how I knew his younger brother, but I never knew him. But we met up then. I think you came home in 58.
Yes.
And maybe he met my mother here. I'm not sure on this. But when he went back, we went to visit their house. They lived on the south side. We lived on the west side. So we were invited to the south side, and it started from there, I guess.
Yeah.
That was 58, and we got married in 64, so it wasn't right away.
Yeah. Yeah. So you went halfway around the world to meet each other, and you're only a few miles from each other here.
Exactly.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Exactly.
What were weddings like in America at that time?
Well, they were big. The Irish weddings were big.
Were
yes.
They?
They were well over 200.
Good parties.
200 attendees, you know, for the weddings. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
They were big, yeah.
Weddings.
And it was all the Irish, of course, the people you work with and all that, too.
Yeah. And would the reception go into the night?
Until
the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a bit, yeah, because, like, you know, I've interviewed people now that have been married, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, and they would say they might only have a breakfast or something, that it's not, you know, we did it right.
We started out with a breakfast, and I do actually have the receipt from our reception breakfast, like, oh, my God, it was, toast, like coffee and eggs and all that, so little.
Yeah.
So little. I mean, I think we could have fed 30 or 40 people for about $100 or something at that time.
What year was that again, sorry?
That was 64. We got married in 64.
64?
Yeah.
What are the maths on that? 61 years married, is it?
Yeah, this year. Yeah, in September.
Whoa. That's some going. You don't look old enough to be married 61 years.
Well, I'm not that old at all.
Yeah. I don't think you are, yeah.
we had in a few years there just...
a bit of vet.
To make it look good.
Bart and Mary O'Riordan there, and we'll have more from them after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Now you're listening to interviews I did with Bart and Mary O'Riordan about their life in Chicago and life in Glenbeigh. They immigrated to Chicago in the 1950s. And I couldn't get over when you listen to their accents. Oh, they haven't really lost the Kerry accent. Do you know what I noticed as well? Your accents. You've kept your Kerry accents.
Yeah. Especially him, I think.
Definitely Bart, yeah. You're like you never went at all with your accent. Was that important to you, do you think? Or is it because you were around with other Irish people?
No, I don't.
Well, I don't know. I didn't...
Change.
I don't know the difference, like.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't try one way or the other. It was just, that was my accent, and that's what I had, and... I don't know. That's the only explanation I could give you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd have a hard time now picking up an accent.
Yeah. And were you able to come back much when you got married after?
Yeah, we didn't come back after we got married. We started having kids.
Yeah.
And I think you were the third kid, and then we came back. And, well, I stayed for about... 9 months when we came back, and I had three kids.
Wow.
And we stayed here. And you went to school, John. Kathy and John, two oldest, they went to the Curraheen School for a couple of months or whatever. So, yeah, and then we went back in February, I think. The only reason we came back is we were living in an apartment and we needed a bigger place. So then he found us a place, so... By that time, he had found some place, and that's when we went back. Yeah.
Did he ever think of coming back permanently?
No.
Was that call ever there? Like
no.
No,
no, not for me. No, no, not for him either.
Not once you settled down, kind of. Yeah. That was the end of that, you know. Because especially when you have kids, that's the end of that story. Like you.
What?
You have to... your kids wouldn't know where they were at if they... If they weren't where they were at, you know.
Mm.
But we came back with the kids every other year then.
Oh, yeah.
We always came back for the vacations here. All these kids, they came back every other year, so they're quite familiar with the. With this
were
place.
Your parents alive? Was it your mother?
Yeah, my mother and my dad were still alive, yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And your mother was still alive too.
Oh, yeah.
Your dad for a while, yeah.
Mm. I'm looking across here at your house. Can you describe, because it's actually still fairly much intact. So what was it that you grew up in, Mary?
First part here was a bedroom.
Yeah.
And then we had the long kitchen. There was only two bedrooms. And then down below, in that corner, was another big bedroom.
Okay.
If you say they're big, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the green shed was where the cows, that was the cow house.
Right. Right next door. So how many were in that house and how many bedrooms?
There was five kids, and mother and father, and my grandmother until she passed away.
She was there as well.
Yeah. And then I think I was seven when we abandoned that house and they built this house.
Yeah.
So we had a little bigger house over here. So, yeah.
Mary and Bart there, and we will be returning to them in the next hour. It was a fairly comprehensive interview I did with them at their home in Glenbeigh. I suppose you would call it their home, even though they live in Chicago, they still call Glenbeigh their home. And we're going to be hearing more about Bart and Mary's memories of their childhood and immigration and everything else. And of course, if you think about it, Bart, being in his 90s, was around when World War II was on. And we'll hear about the rations and everything else, the rationing that went on during the emergency, as it was called in Ireland at the time, and much, much more. We'll also have our scale Unshanuckle, And this is the 19th of a 20-part series produced and presented by students of Scolvey Hill, NAFA in Ballinskelligs. We will explore a wide range of Shanuckle throughout the series, and the children can obtain the meaning behind these old Irish phrases. We'll see, can they? To aid the students in this, we'll hear from Sean O'Line, a native of Ballinskelligs and a Kynthor Dukas, to discuss the real meaning behind these old Irish phrases. Remember, the theme for next month's In Focus Photography slot is A Day in September I'll Always Remember. That's the theme. Send your photos and the story to go with the photos to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month. We're going to take a break and we'll be hearing more from Bart and Mary Reardon after the news at 10.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
We're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. On the Saturday Supplement this morning, we're hearing an interview I did with Bart and Mary O'Riordan a few weeks ago when they were home from Chicago. They immigrated there in the 1950s from Glenbey and met over and got married. And even though Bart is now in his 90s, Mary and himself still return home to Glenbey. And I caught up with them to have a good old chat. And I want to thank Tina Casey from Libes, who organised that interview for me. And Tina, if you're listening, you have a very interesting story yourself. So I wouldn't mind chatting to you about it as well. And Tina's over in Chicago. I want to thank her for putting me in touch with Mary and Bart. Now, when World War II began in 1939, Ireland declared an official state of emergency on the 2nd of September 1939. The Emergency Powers Act was enacted the following day. This gave new powers to the Irish government for the duration of World War II. The Irish government now had control of censorship of newspapers and all letters. Rationing of food, clothes and petrol was introduced. The 6 years of the war became known as the emergency to the people of Ireland. When older Irish people spoke of the memories of the war, they always called it the emergency. Sean Lamass was appointed as Minister for Supplies in September 1939. Now, ration books were introduced to everyone in Ireland. In this area, the actual war was fought in distant lands, but the local abiding memories was the rationing of tea, sugar, cigarettes, flour, cloth, etc. And Bart remembers the time of the rations.
You'd only get so much, like, they were holding stuff for our cousins. And they went in and they said, the private was looking for it, and they said, oh, well, you already got what you... And they said, well, what's your name? And I told them I was Connell. So I got the Connell's share of it. And so I was coming out, and who did I meet going to the store? Only one of the Connells. They were my cousins. And of course, they went in and they were looking for their share. They said, oh, wasn't one of you just in here while they're going? No, none of us were in here. But you had to pull whatever trick you could just to get what you wanted, you know.
Because that was the time of the emergency. So Ireland was a neutral state in the time of... And then there was rationing of food.
Everything was rationed. You know?
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Tea, butter?
Tea and butter. Well, butter we could get ourselves. We could do that. But anything that you had to buy in a store was rationed.
Mm-hmm. And so what would that... You get a slip, is it? What, you get so much per month, or what would it
you
work?
Got a book.
Book.
With coupons.
Like, yes, stamps.
And you went in, and if you wanted to get a loaf of bread, you paid so many coupons, and if you played this, you had to have so many coupons, and, oh, my God, sure, we had 2 dozen kids, and by the time we got through, oh, we went, you know, and I had to go for the neighbours and all that stuff. And, well, you I'll tell you, your imagination worked.
You got creative. Father Jones, I did a documentary on handball and on one particular man, Dominic Lynch, who's so successful at handball from Glenbey. Yeah. And the man that set up the handball club, a historical figure now, because it's a wonderful alley they have there, is Father Jones. So you knew him, Bart, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about him.
He was a tough man.
Mm.
When he'd stop at the school... And he had a baby fold, I think it was. And we would go out and he'd say, I'll have to have a couple of the boys push my car.
Yeah.
So we'd go out and we'd push the car, and just about when we'd go to start, we'd hold back. And we'd push away again, and just when we hit the put, we'd stop again. You know, and he said, push harder, boys, push harder. And we wanted to get as far away from the school as we possibly could.
You'd end up in Clare,
Oh, I'll tell you now, we left the Leather School and we were well down drawn by the time. It was the hill down drawn to start in his car. We got to there, and when we pushed him, when we went down the hill,
hill did the job then.
He got rolling.
Yeah.
The farming then, cows, you would have had to do that, Mary. You all had your chores growing up, I'd imagine. Yeah. You had to pull your weight.
Yeah.
Before you went to school and after you came home from school, you had to do the chores. And in the morning, we did have some fields down in Rail na Gáin, and we would have to walk down there, sometimes maybe take a bike if we had a bike, and bring the cows home to get milked, and then cycle into Killarney. So that was maybe three times a week for the cows, maybe they leave them up here. So that was
it. What would you cycle into Clarendon with? For what, sorry?
For school.
Okay.
For school.
Oh, right after?
Yes, the technical school.
There was no need of gym, so.
Oh, my God, I would think not. And you came home from school and it was the same thing. You have to go out and dig the potatoes or cut the mangles for the cows or whatever.
Mm.
Or clean the cows.
The fair days, I've often covered, you know, the fair days in South Kerry and around, and people walk long distances with their cattle. He would have had to do the same. And Puck is just gone.
No, we didn't go to the fair. We didn't only had three cows.
Okay.
And one donkey.
And Bart, would you have had to go to the fair, like Puck Fair, selling cattle or anything?
Oh, every fair.
Would you?
Yeah, we thought we were at every fair selling stuff. When we were doing the walk, and we'd walk them in For the sheep fair, and if they didn't sell, you walked them home again.
And is that in Clarglen, like we're talking about Puck Fair?
Yeah, and then you go back in for the cattle fair again the next morning, and if they didn't sell, you walked home again. Otherwise, you could take the train, like, but with the cattle, you didn't put them on the train, you walked them home, so.
Were cattle kind of more mannerly then, if you know what I mean? Like, would they walk away with you? Because they were handled.
Yeah, they were. Easy enough to, I mean.
You wouldn't be blocking every gap.
It never bothered us too much one way or the other, even sheep or cattle. It was, but everybody else was doing the same thing. Like,
I know, yeah.
So we wouldn't be alone now. That'd be, when you went to town with a flock of sheep, you had the neighbours with you because they all had sheep. Like, and,
yeah.
You know, there was big families in Leather that time. You know, that school in Leather that time was a big school.
Mm. You'd know bogs, of course, because your land was too good around here, did you?
Jeez, we spent more time in the bog than we did at home.
And where would the bogs be, over?
My bog was over here in Carr Lake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, for us, the bogs were up by the lakes and, you know, the what would you call them?
Cumasaharn, is it?
Not Cumasaharn, no, the other ones. We didn't actually have a name for the lakes, but there was a couple of lakes up there anyway. But that's where the bogs were and all that stuff. I mean, the bog was Ming Wan Bog, is what they called it. But that's where we had, that's where our bogs were. And there was a lake, on one. There was two good-sized lakes there, and there were two good fishing lakes too.
Mm. How would you fish out of them?
Huh?
What would you fish out of them?
Oh, that was whatever was in there. No, there was great fishing there now in the summertime, like that, because you'd have a lot of fish coming up from the ocean, and you had a lot of tourists that time that we took up there, and they liked that fishing. There was great. There was great fishing that time.
Would there be tourism like that around?
There was a lot of tourism that time.
Yeah. So you'd be like the gillies that used to be in Waterville, they'd bring them out in the lake and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Would it be sea trout or what would it be?
The sea trout was the big trout, like.
Yeah.
But you had lake trout as well. because that time everybody had a farm, and every time you had a farm you had to plant, you know, whatever potatoes or anything you planted, and it was all fertilised, but it was all fertilised with farm manure. But then later on, when you started using the shake of the bag, as they called it, you know,
The artificial fertilizer. Yeah.
Well, that was killing not only the flies and everything else, but when that got into the river, it killed the fish as well.
Because it was being washed in there.
Yeah. So that kind of killed the fishing business, you know. It was there used to be great fishing rivers, and the lakes up there were great fishing. There used to be a lot of tourists up there.
Mm.
But that wiped out all that stuff, all that what do they call it? They had a name for it anyway, but it was that's what the damage.
Mm. The bog, a day at the bog. What would be a typical day at the bog? How would you get the turf out? How was it cut?
Oh, cut it with the schlaan, was what they called it, and you had to have three people, the one fella on the schlaan, and the other guy throwing it up on the bank, and the other fella spreading it.
Mm.
So that was the... And you would cut the bank a certain width so that you could... Then you knew how many feet you had to throw it out the bank. You know, if you were cutting it wider, then you'd have to have extra people.
Okay.
So you would cut it a certain width so that three people could handle it, that kind of way. So that was...
And how would you bring it home?
Oh, it would be the pony and car, or if you didn't have a pony and car, then you'd get the donkey and car or whatever you'd have. Like, but most people had a pony that time, and that's how you brought it home, was the pony and car.
Mm. I know a person that has Ard Kos turf over in America by the fireplace. Oh, because yeah. I went in and I said, "Geez, what's that?" She was just, "So you don't know a turf?" And I said, "Yeah," but I said, "How is that over here? Where did you get that?" And they brought it over in the suitcase. You wouldn't get away with it now, did you?
I brought two sods over, two or more.
Really?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then the kids used to take them for science projects, you know, it depends. It might come in with a science project, you know. Yeah.
But it was a piece of home.
Oh, it was. Oh, it was. I think it's still in the house someplace.
Yeah. And there's unique smell off turf as well, isn't
there? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You get that.
Well, we smelled enough of it.
And smelled of it.
Yeah. But it was always good to have the tea in the bog. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Was that not cold, was it?
Oh, no. You'd make the fire and you'd have the kettle right there. Oh, right. You'd make the fire there. Otherwise, you know, they would just take a bottle of tea with them in a sock. That was the insulation. The knee-high socks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keep it
was
warm.
A great cellar that time, you know. Because there was nothing else.
Turf?
Turf was the for everybody.
Mm.
And we used to sell it to the school and sell it to the parish and everything else. So
you wouldn't have to bring a sod of turf with you to school. That's the way it was.
Yes.
A lot of schools.
That was, yeah. That was it. You had to come in with your two sods of turf.
Yeah.
And that was how it kept the school fire going.
Oh, yeah.
I think there were some places that they might take two sods off a reek that was on the way to school.
Oh, I like that. That was a lot.
No, I remember. We used to go to the shed up there, two sods, and we'd always look for the best even sods. You know, they had to be perfect, taking them to school.
Because there might be war if there wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to bring the two sods, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Bart and Mary O'Riordan there, and we'll hear more from them after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
You're listening to an interview I did with Bart and Mary O'Riordan, who immigrated to Chicago in the 50s, natives of Glimbe. Now, Bart's family were entrepreneurial when it came to farming, and they had their own chicken hatchery. The hens as well, the hatchery. Was it ye, Bart, that had the hatchery? Tell us about that.
Oh, that was what we had, what you call an incubator.
Yeah.
And you could put 10 dozen eggs in there. And that's, you know, you had that 120 chickens then, like. And we had two hen houses And that was a big sale. That was a big money maker, you know.
But was that your father that was doing that?
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of ahead of his time, was he? Because there was no electricity, I'd imagine, that time. So how were you managing an incubator?
Oh, no, you had a... It had a heater, and you had to put the stuff in there to keep the... To get the eggs to...
Hatch.
You had to keep a certain amount of heat.
And how would you heat it? With kerosene or something? Or like?
No. Everything, there was no...
Yeah,
there was, kerosene wasn't hanging around loose that time at all. It was oil heat, you know, and 10 dozen eggs at a time.
You
know.
And where would you sell the chicks then?
Oh, well, you could sell them. There was no problem selling them. You had them coming to the house looking for them, you know, from the hotels and any of them places. Well, my mother had 2 chicken houses. And she'd keep about, I don't know how many dozen in each one of them. And that was a money maker. That was the what would keep you going, like. That was a great thing.
Did he have a pig?
Oh, yeah. Everybody had a pig.
And if they were, like, farrowing, if they were having the bonavs, would you bring them into the house?
No, we didn't have... Poor pig didn't last that long. No, you bought a bonav and you fattened him up and you ate him, you know, when he got big enough to butcher him. That was it. We didn't get into the business of raising him at all. That was it.
But every part of Mary would be used of a pig back then.
Oh, yeah, every part, yeah. We had a pig too.
Yeah.
And the same guy from up the parish, he would come and kill the pig and... It was a big day, you know, killing the pig. And then when they'd cut it up, then it was our job to go around to the neighbors with a slab of the fresh meat. And the black puddings or whatever they would make was black puddings then.
Yeah.
Make the black puddings and go around and give all the neighbors
a piece of bacon. No two people would kill a pig at the same time. It was kind of a rotation. So when you killed a pig, then you shared with everybody. When they killed it, they shared, and that was the fresh meat you had.
But wasn't that a lovely thing? You were looking out for each other.
There was no refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know, that was...
It only all got waste, so this was a smart way of doing it. And then you'd cure certain meat, I presume.
Well,
you'd salt it.
If you cured it, you salted it. Now that it wasn't the same taste as the fresh.
Yeah,
so that was...
That had to last for the winter then, you know.
Well, everybody had a pig that you salted, like, so that you always had meat, but it didn't taste like the fresh.
Mm.
So, you know, that was the... Every time somebody killed a pig, they shared, and it was, that was the... Well, whatever was left, you salted, and that was what you kept, like.
Yeah, but there was a great mehl, so, like, people would help even at harvest time, I'd imagine, the hay, or if you were threshing or something, would neighbours help?
Cutting the turf.
Yeah.
That's if you didn't have the help, you could never cut turf. So anything you did, you had to have help.
Mm.
So neighbours had to help neighbours. That was the whole idea.
Mm.
And that's how it worked, like, that was... But at that time, all the neighbours, you know, there was no automobile anywhere. So all the neighbours, they all talked to each other. If somebody was going to the store or something like that, they'd stop at the house, that's the neighbour's house, and they said, "You want something? I'm going down to the village." And that was the way it...
Mm.
Everybody helped everybody. That was the name of the game.
Yeah. You both looked like you could dance. So where did you go when you were teenagers around here?
Dancing was no problem.
He's hopeless. To this day.
I'm recording this, you know, Mary.
To this day. Oh, my God.
You can record it all you want. My dancing won't improve.
Oh, God, yeah.
At this stage.
Yeah.
Well, where would you go?
We went to the dances, all the big show bands.
Yeah.
They were dancers, weren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, my mom and my dad love to dance. And they won competitions for waltzing and all that stuff.
And what about playing music? Were you into music?
The melodeon. My mom and my dad, accordion, they had it, yeah.
Yeah.
But we took it up a little bit, you know, but it wasn't all music.
But if you could play and, like, you could dance,
you dance in each other's houses then as well, like, you know, that was a thing as well.
Yeah, people, when they had the biddy.
Yeah.
And they'd have the parties. Yeah. You'd be invited to the different houses. Yeah, and then, dance around the floor, yeah.
Yeah.
But where was the dance hall here? Was it in Clarendon? Would you have to go to Clarendon? Or was there anything in Glenbey?
Yeah. What
there was?
The Emer Ballroom in Glenbey.
Okay.
Yeah. Right down at the crossroads.
Right down that far, yeah.
That one was where the houses are now. That was a big ballroom.
And was it like the creamery dance, the Eastmead, or whatever the kind of...
No, the waltzes, the driving and all that, yeah. Uh-huh. And we went to the O'Sheen in Killargland. And actually, once in a while, we went to Farden Four for dances, if there was a big band coming.
Really?
Yeah.
There used to be dances in the houses, like that. I remember when we were young, that, you know, the neighbours would come in and all that, and they would all dance around the floor. They had to put on the music and away they went, and that was it.
Yeah.
But I was never good at
Weren't people very self-sufficient when you think about it? Like, you talk about your own pig, your own turf for heating, fish for eating, your own entertainment. You know, it was all self-contained, wasn't it?
Yeah, very interesting conversation with Mary and Bart O'Riordan there, and we'll hear more from them after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
Radio Kerry.
You're listening to interviews I did with Bart and Mary O'Riordan, who immigrated to Chicago in the 1950s and are natives of Glenbey. Now, Bart's brother, John O'Riordan, was a US Marine in Korea, and he was missing in action at one point. Now, a soldier called to the house and told Bart's mother not to expect him home, presuming he was dead. Now, John was found 1 month later in a Californian hospital. Only 5 of the 200 to survive the battle. And John saved 2 and was awarded a Silver Star for his exceptional bravery and valour. His courageous actions on August 9th, 1952, during the Korean War, earned him this prestigious honour. The Silver Star is the 3rd highest US combat-only award, recognising extraordinary acts of heroism and selflessness in the face of danger. And he also received the Purple Heart and Medal of Valour. So I asked Bart about his memories of John's time in the war.
The other thing I want to talk about was your brother. He was in the army, wasn't he?
Yeah, my brother John.
Yeah.
He was in the Marines, the US Marine Corps. And he got injured in the Marine Corps as well, you know.
He was in the Korean War, was he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he got injured.
He got injured, yeah. He got all kinds of medals and all that kind of stuff. But that was...
He got injured.
Yeah, so Mary, to tell his story, because it's fascinating. Like, he was missing for a good while, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He was missing in action, yes, as they called it. Because during the war, you didn't, you know, where you were at, you were away from everything.
Communication.
Yeah.
Mm. So he was presumed missing in action for a month.
Oh, they had never heard from him.
Yeah.
They never had any contact or knew where he was at, whether he was dead or alive, while he was in combat.
When they finally found him, he was in the hospital when they found him. He'd been wounded. You know. Oh, yeah.
And he saved a few people as well, did he?
Oh, yeah, he did. He was he got a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. Yeah, he got a lot of medals.
He was older than you, Bart?
Yeah.
By much?
4 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was a war hero, so...
Yeah, he was.
So when he went over, did he get into the army straight away?
No. He...
No choice.
When the war started, he was...
Drafted.
He was drafted, yeah.
Okay.
So that was how he got in the service, like. Yeah. So it wasn't any volunteers. It was just that's the way it was.
But he was a brave man, wasn't he? What he achieved.
You had no choice once you were in there.
Mm.
You better do what you were supposed to do, like.
Yeah.
But he liked it anyway. When he was in the Marines, he liked the Marines.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he talk about it much?
No.
No.
I've never met anybody that was in the service that talked a lot about the service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The nature of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. They came out and did their job and they didn't lift to there.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a great photo of him, actually, I saw in his uniform.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lovely photo, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, back in Mary and Bart's childhood, there was great excitement at Christmas time when the parcel would come from America. So what were the traditions like back then?
Well, at the house, we decorated the house. We had the three candles in the windows, and we always brought in the red berry holly and decorated the house. We didn't have Christmas trees then.
Really?
No, we didn't have any Christmas tree. And then, of course, Christmas Eve, I think it was, we would go to midnight mass. And it was lovely going to midnight mass in the dark, and then you'd see the houses with all the candles lit up. And, that was it.
Yeah.
And the big thing, I suppose, to see those candles lit up, it's even a tradition that's held to this day. It's beautiful to see it around the countryside, isn't it? You can look out at Christmas time.
You'd look out and you'd wonder, oh, do they have a candle? And then you'd see the light, you know, so.
People used to, Christmas Eve, they would go around and visit each other's houses. And, you know, of course, as soon as you walked in the door, there was a... And that was... And it was a social, great social thing, you know, that everybody went around and met the other neighbours, and everybody got together, and they were all ready for Christmas then by the time they got home.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention as well, like, your family is kind of steeped in history. If you think about the time of the War of Independence and coming them on and all that, you've kind of both of connections there, don't you?
I guess so. I'm not too familiar with them, but my dad was in it, or was associated with it. But Bart's...
Well, they were all stuck on that. With
your mom and
you know,
dad.
My mom was... stuck on that very deep
and coming them on
and coming them on and all that stuff, you know, that all the family. Well, my dad was a policeman, and later on that's what he did later, but
with the RIC.
yeah well, that was the...
but he did it he made a moral stance, didn't he?
Oh yeah, sure, that time you had to.
Yeah. But he stood up for someone, didn't he? Wasn't there some story
what
there?
I never got into any... actually, never got into any of that into it myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But a lot of people used to come to the house thanking him for something. Mm. I never knew what the hell it was.
Yeah. Mary, who's in family? We better give him a mention.
Who's in family? I have two sisters, Kathy and Sheila.
Yeah. And your kids then?
Oh, my kids.
They're big kids now, I should say. They're
kids. Kathy, John, Mary, Brendan, and Morris.
And are they all in Chicago? Or?
They're in Chicago.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you've grandkids, I assume.
I have two grandkids, one guy right over there and his sister that just went back, and they live in Idaho.
Okay.
And all the rest live in Chicago. Yeah. Oh, and I have four more grandkids in Chicago.
Isn't it lovely, though, to be able to come back to Glenbey?
Oh, it is. Yes.
Come back home. Do you still say this is home, I presume?
Oh, we say that even in America, you know, it's home. If we talk about something here, it's home. You know, back home and just reminisce all the time. Mm. So,
How do you keep a connection to home besides the house? Do you listen to the radio?
Oh, I listen to my Kerry radio all the time. I do my dancing around the kitchen, especially Moriarty.
Oh, Dermot.
Dermot from Killarney, and Sunday nights, the guy from Tralee. Oh.
Sean Riley from Cavan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but he tapes it from, they have wonderful songs.
Yeah.
So, I enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, we listen to all the Gaelic games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either on GAA or whatever else.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, we haven't even touched on that, the Gaelic football. You're obsessed with Gaelic football, and it's a huge part of your life. I see the Kerry flag is outside the thing.
Yeah,
so you must have been fairly happy a few weeks ago when Sam came back to the county again, Mark.
That was his natural step.
his natural home.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think Sam should ever leave Kerry, you know, because...
That's very selfish.
Well, no, because that's where he belongs. Like, it's... Well, of course, we have to share with the others, I suppose, once in a while.
It makes it all the sweeter when he comes home.
Yeah, that's for sure. He was very good. Yeah, it was Fun listening to it. But my daughter over there, she is a total
fanatic.
Fanatic in football, and she lives in Idaho. And she will call us. That's Mary. Yeah. She will call us up and say, "Are you listening to the game?" No, the game is on. Yeah.
Well, yeah. She all the games were exciting. That was that was the one when we were kids. That was the game. Like
Well, his brother Jerry was a Kerry football player.
Oh yeah, he played with the Kerry team. Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
What year? 67. 63.
Yeah, it was 63.
Let's say 63.
Yeah, he. Won an All-Ireland medal with the minors and I think with the seniors
well,
as
I
well.
Know the seniors, we watched that one. Yeah.
And how would you watch a game if you were over in Chicago?
They would bring it in, didn't they?
Yeah, we can see the games there. Well, Gaelic Park is there now. So.
Yeah, but back in the day, would you listen to it?
They would always bring it into some place.
Yeah, it was on radio.
Yeah, even, I don't care, it's a good many years ago now, but they always found a way to bring in the games.
On the radio,
That must have been a fierce source of pride to have a brother playing with Kerry.
Well, because a lot of good fellas were playing for Kerry that time.
I know, yeah. Over in Chicago, you must have been like, my brother was playing for Kerry.
Well, I wouldn't brag in it.
I know, you wouldn't boast. You don't seem like a lad that'd boast, but you must have been fairly happy.
Oh, yeah, I was very happy that he was playing, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but he was a good footballer. He deserved to be playing. That's the reason he was playing, you know. Yeah.
It's a lot smaller world now, isn't it? When we talk about that, though, do you know, like you're able to watch the games now. You're able to look at them. You know, even communication so much better. When you think you had to write a letter, wait for an answer.
Oh, sure.
You know, if someone passed away, you were very far away. You know, things are a lot better now.
Yeah.
There's. I mean, it keeps improving all the time. That's the...
Like right now, I don't think we can keep up with them.
That's the good thing about it. Everything is improving all the time, you know. Even the work. What you made a living at that time, there's no work in that kind of line of work anymore, you know. Everything is mechanical, you know, so... Yeah.
And finally, we're speaking a lot about the olden days, say, and times. It's great that you're actually here talking to me and explaining it, because some people won't even have an iota of what things were like. Because, like, from the 90s kind of on, things changed dramatically around here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I remember going to school. I was born in 82. I remember going to school as a child, donkeys and carts. Uh-huh. You know, so it wasn't that far, you know, away. But then things just changed dramatically. Mobile phones came in, the Celtic Tiger. Things just seemed to move so quickly. So I'm just wondering, like, some people look back with nostalgia, maybe rose-tinted glasses, and other people say it was very tough back then, and it was tough times. What way do you look back in it now, you know,
I didn't think it was tough, you know. It was normal. That was all normal life, you know. I never looked at it as being tough. And I don't think my parents looked at this, you know, the same way. That's what it was, and that's what you did, and you didn't complain about it. The only thing you had that time, though, was the neighbors helped each other.
Yeah, the man. Yeah.
Everybody helped each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like him, I didn't. It was the way it was. Mm-hmm. We just put up with it, and that was it. We didn't know any different, I don't think.
Yeah, that's what everybody did. That was the way it was.
Know, everybody was kind of in the same boat. So. Mm-hmm.
Look, thanks a million for inviting me here. Well, thanks for the lovely conversation.
It's nice that somebody is keeping a record of it. You know?
Yes, well, it is important, I think.
Because it'll all be forgotten if there's somebody to keep a record of it.
Yeah.
So, which is good.
Well, we've this recorded now, so it won't be forgotten in
a hurry. Yeah, but I'm saying it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I often say, I teach broadcasting in Kerry College with Radio Kerry, and we often say, we put up on the board when we start the class at the beginning of the year, we say, when an old person dies, a library burns, because all that knowledge is gone, everything is gone. It's so important. I think it's so important to kind of capture that, so people are aware of where they come from. We're looking at
an abandoned kind of a shed there in our house. Uh-huh. And to think that's where you were born, and that means so much to you and has so many memories to you. It's the stories that bring these places to life. Well, and it's your stories that are important. So thanks a million for sharing.
Well, even when I was a kid and people would come to the house, and like we're talking now, they'd be talking about stuff that happened. And we used to say, why the hell are they talking about stuff that happened so long ago? You know, that why are they doing that? We don't remember any of that stuff. What the hell are they talking about?
Yeah.
And to them it was, that was their life.
Yeah.
They'd be talking about the black and tans and stuff like that. And they said, geez, why are they talking about that?
And that was such history.
To them it was...
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago at all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks a million.
Welcome, my man.
An amazing story both Bart and Mary have, and they're still going strong, and I want to say hello to them. They're listening in America, and if they're listening back at the podcast as well, because I don't think the time lines up with Chicago. But isn't it amazing to hear all these people that listen to us over in America and that they keep connected to their home place as well? It's wonderful to hear. So thanks a million. It was an absolute pleasure being in the house with Bart and Mary and surrounded by their family as well. And I want to wish them all the best in the future. And it is important that they share their story as well, because, you know, it's important to know where we came from and to know what life was like here in Kerry, because things are changing so much. So it's great to, you know, to know what way it was and how people lived, and all the sacrifices that were made as well, and the people that had to immigrate. And it's lovely to hear that they come back so much as well. So we wish them all the best, and hopefully Sam will be home in Kerry again next year. I know that'll make them all happy, all the Reardons as well. Now we're going to go to a break, and after that we'll have another episode of The Scale on Chinnuckle.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
Now it's time for another episode of The Scale on Chinnuckle. We've only two more episodes to go. Produced and presented by the students of Scolvey Hill Nathan Balance Skelligs, we explore a wide range of Chinnuckle throughout the series. We'll see if the children can obtain the meaning behind these old Irish phrases. To aid the students in this, we'll hear from Sean O'Lyne, a native of Ballinskelligs, and a Cointhor Dúchas, to discuss the real meaning behind these old Irish phrases. Here is Scale an Chinnuckle, produced by Máire Ní Bhunaithe. This documentary is a Máire Ní Bhunaithe production. It was funded by Comisiún na Mban with the television licence fee.
Ashgrin and Puka Lane Chefin.
Ershka Akila Avar Nadina.
Ahanin Kiro Kirog Ella.
Managurhe Tusum Iraq Nivinig Tisa Moor.
Garian Bert Boher.
Every day in school we hear the teacher mention a Shan Uckle, where we see posters of them up around the classroom.
Our grandparents and parents sometimes use them in passing in conversation. Sometimes the meaning is simple and easily understood, and other times the message is a bit more complex. I want to explore how these old Irish proverbs came about and really understand the true meaning behind them.
In this series, join me and my classmate from Scolvey Hill Naifa, Ballinasceligs, County Kerry, as we explore what these old Irish sayings are all about and how they add so much to the Irish language.
An rud a scrín an púca léinn sé féine.
Ar scá a chéile a bhar na díne.
A hanín círóg círóg ila.
Mána gurthé tú son a rach ní bhuinig tú sa bhúr.
Garian Bert Boher.
Every day in school, we hear the teacher mention a Shan Uckle, or we see posters of them up around the classroom.
Our grandparents and parents sometimes use them in passing in conversation. Sometimes the meaning is simple and easily understood, and other times the message is a bit more complex. I want to explore how these old Irish proverbs came about and really understand the true meaning behind them. In this series, join me and my classmate from Scolvey Hill Naifa, Ballinasceligs, County Kerry, as we explore what these old Irish sayings are all about and how they add so much to the Irish language.
Dave, Ishmisha, Michaela, Nicola Coeur. I'm in second class in Scalfihill Nafa in Ballinasloe, County Kerry. Today, I'm going to find out the real meaning behind the Shanukal. Tahi Ayanan Mashtuk.
Tahi Ayanan Mashtuk. This is a good Shanukal and one that is quite well known. Let's see if the posse from Scalfihill Nafa know the meaning behind it.
Tahi is experience. I'm not sure what Mashtuk means.
My granddad said it to me one day when I was practicing football skills.
My mom said it to me when I was playing a tune.
I think it translates as experience brings perfection or mastery.
Yes, the more you practice something, the better you become at it.
To explain to us all about Shan Uckle and to find out the real meaning behind various ones, today we are going to hear from Sean O'Line. Sean is a native of Ballinskellig and was an Irish teacher and previta in Closter Own in Dublin.
Now let's hear from our expert Sean O'Line as he explains the Shan Uckle, Tahi Ayena Marshtuk.
Tahi Ayena Marshtuk. And this here a Tahi. Tahi, experience. Our bees don't play in English. Be a clay, either. Could tell loud, I was scary. Can't wait?
Kiri.
Can't fall.
Be
shady, far. I was can't fall, but all the bees far. And the what? Be kiri. And clock the pen of day here, pigeon and clock the pen of day here. I was taught Tahi, that experience, at Kohi of Wachit. Tahi, I in a marshal. So, damn it, taught Tainabi on the back of Gahan, by his daughter Taco, Jack O'Connell, and in the pen of the order one of Taco. Sean O'Shea, Sean O'Shea, my fan. David Clifford. So, Tahi, Shinia Nadina, Avon Tahi, Tahi, Ako, and they came at a guinea, Kunte Exula, as a clay of what? Kailinjin Nishitarish, Igrovini, I've been hoping Tami de Sul, Gumuichin crave the hair, did we? This year. So Tahi Ayena Mashtuk.
Iniag Akela a Hogter in the Cashlan.
Koshida Ergower is Gower Fos A.
Na Bakle Mak Unvakig is Nivakig Mak Unvakig Lat.
Is Far Rima no Draw Yasim.
Ni Ma a Hilter a Viter.
Irish Shanakal are old Irish proverbs full of knowledge, humour and wisdom. Shanakal are a unique part of the Irish language and support the rich Irish culture and heritage that has been around for thousands of years. Join me and my classmates from Scalfihill Nafa, Ballinasloe, on a journey of discovery as we explore these popular old Irish proverbs.
Akela a hogter in the Cashlan.
Koshida air gower is gower frozen.
Na bakle mak unvakig is nivakig, mak unvakig lat.
Is far rima no draw yasim.
Ni ma a hilter a viter.
Irish Shanakal are old Irish proverbs full of knowledge, humour and wisdom. Shanakal are a unique part of the Irish language and support the rich Irish culture and heritage that has been around for thousands of years. Join me and my classmates from Scalfihill Nafa, Ballinasloe on a journey of discovery as we explore these popular old Irish proverbs.
Yeah, that was another episode of the Scale Lunch and Uckle, produced and presented by the students of Scolvey Hill Nefa in Ballinskilligs, and also produced by Maury Nivahuna, and they were ably assisted by Cantor Dukas Sean O'Leary, a native of Ballinskilligs. That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. Thanks a million for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the programme. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. Frank Lewis is on next Saturday with another great programme. And I'll join you again the Saturday after. Until then, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.